welcome back to another episode of Reliability Boombox, proudly brought to you by Reliability Extranet Group of Companies. And joining me again is our lovely co-host, Seven, aka Peter Horsburgh. Seven, Jack. Seven.
Hello. Hey, everyone.
Awesome. Well, last few weeks we've been talking about five habits of an extraordinary reliability engineer, and we're up to habit four. So today we're going to talk about habit four, which is decide with data, however you like to pronounce it. Pretty critical thing. I think it's a very relevant point. You know, obviously we've covered off a lot of the other aspects, and you know, in particular last week I really enjoyed that, talking about questions and the importance of questions, and even just how that led into this point itself, and that's deciding with your data.
Yes.
So Seven, give us a rundown. Why do you feel that this is critical?
Well, people generally don't make decisions these days on people's opinions, do they?
you need
some sort of data in some sort of shape or form to make a decision, you know, and data is very accessible. Some would probably say too accessible, maybe. That's the whole thing. Us as reliability engineers, you know, we are essentially, if I was to draw a picture and part of the book, we've got management, and we've got the plant, and we basically sit smack right in the middle, okay? So essentially, if we're going this direction to ask for dollars so that we can spend it back down on here, we better have some data to be able to get data to basically convince people to spend those dollars, you know? And so a habit of ours is to actually use data. Okay, so skill set, part of the, you know, what do you call it? You know, habits that we do is we get data and we manipulate it and put it in a form that people can easily understand and say, yes, we need to do that.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes, it like you said, you hope that a lot of people are not just going off someone's opinion and a view, point of others, and that we actually find some quantitative and qualitative data to, you know, review and process and put a case forward, especially when you're talking about any significant volume of money. And, you know, if you're talking about a large organization, that could be in the millions. If you're talking about a small organization, that can be in the hundreds of dollars. You know, it doesn't have to be that much. It's all relative to your business.
Yeah.
Though, to have some information that supports what sort of a decision you're going to make or what you need to do is very important.
Yes.
So what forms of data, when we're talking about the reliability world and the maintenance world, what would you say would be the top five forms of data to come in?
Top five? I'm going to go a little bit less. well, it all comes down to this seesaw. If we think of this, we're trying to balance dollars with output, production output, right? So, or some people would argue, if I use the classic OEE analogy, so OEE, overall equipment effectiveness, is made up of availability times rate times quality. Okay. Yep. So we need data definitely in this space around dollars. Okay. But the overall goal of being a reliability engineer is to get the most out of something costing you the least when you're finished with it. So we need parameters around output and we need parameters around dollars, how much it's costing us. Okay. People will put in the word there, risk.
Yeah. Okay.
So risk can form, you know, obviously financial risk, safety, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Different sorts of risks with the plant. Okay. So yes, we would put that in there as well, but I'm just going to come primarily the ones that you focus on. All right. Being a reliability engineer, like for us, safety is a given. We do things safely. Okay.
But
again, we're trying to we're trying to keep this under check. So output, if I use the OEE model, availability times rate, I'll just write rate and quality. Okay, so we need information in these, I'm going to use the word spaces or domains, okay, around that. The other piece is that if, you know, we go into a purist sense of reliability and PF curves and detecting failures.
Yeah.
Right, so I'm going to draw the classic PF. This is failure or potential failure. Okay, and we get this lead time. So this is where we get into, you know, the condition monitoring, detecting when things are going to fail, predictive analytics, all that sort of stuff. Then basically any sort of operational data that is collected is fair game. All right?
Yeah.
Any sort of operational data is fair game where we can produce, you know, we could see the symptoms of something actually starting to fail. So we could actually see that we're in this zone here or somewhere in between here and here.
Yeah.
So I think I might have even hit my five now. So I break it roughly into two, like your dollars and your let's call it output, operational data.
Yep.
Okay, that can then be cost broken data. Down. Yeah, cost data, operational, then availability, rate, quality. And then you could even drill down even further. Like, obviously, if you're going to lose availability, i.e. the plant's going to fail, right, it can drill down even further into the physical measurements. Let's call it, the physical measurements.
Mm-hmm.
And come back to what we talked about last week, smooth, clean, cool, dry.
Yep.
Okay. So, obviously, temperature.
Yep.
Parts per million in H2O, water, dry, smooth, clean, cleanliness.
Yep.
Smooth, vibration.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, we need that sort of data as well at that level when we're doing predictive sort of stuff. Then obviously correctly loaded.
I think you far exceeded the five now.
Yeah, I have. But imagine this. Like, you imagine in an organisation, like, far exceeded the five, right?
Yeah.
But in an organisation, like a business or a company or whatever, whoever you're working for, right?
Yeah.
In this brief conversation, we've just talked about the amount of stuff that gets collected.
Yeah.
Just through normal business. And I'm not saying add anything extra. I'm saying just the stuff that you're already collecting is useful, right? And I've lost count of how many times people have told me that the data that we collect is crap, right? And it's not worth anything. And I've lost count of how many times we've dived into something and found something.
You know,
yesterday I was talking to a guy, helping him out with some data. I was helping him out with Habit 4, Decide with Data.
Mm-hmm.
And they were trying to, let's quantify improvements. They're trying to quantify improvements. They had a focus group on site that were looking at a specific problem on a specific piece of equipment. And they were looking at, we were talking about, how do we measure that? How does it work? Right? How can we see that improvement? Have we actually made a difference? Right?
Yep.
And it was really, really interesting because he was sort of, I'm sort of coaching and mentoring this guy through this process. And I asked him, go to your audience, right, your peers, and see what they want to say. And he had a thought of, I should display it using, I'm not going to use, well, I'm, yeah, I might as well use it. He said, I'm going to talk in availability. Right.
Yeah.
They didn't get it. They talk in hours. So hours lost, right? And I said, yeah. Right, well, that makes it a whole heap easier for us, doesn't it? And he says, what do you mean? And I said, well, there's two aspects to this. And coming back to habit one, in one of our earlier podcasts, there's two things that you should measure, right? People use the pre-days. So how big is the problem compared to everything else?
Yep.
Is it getting better or worse?
Yep.
Over time. So is it getting better or worse over time? So what we did, was we developed a visual, and I love, you know me, and I love Power BI. So we created a visual when you click on, say, this one here, which is, you know, the thing that they were interested in.
Yeah.
Okay. It automatically produced a line plot. And the interesting thing was, if I check this out, the story went along the lines of this. So I could actually see the problem growing.
Yeah.
And I've lost count of how many times this has occurred in my career. And they could see the problem growing. They realize that the problem is growing. And I'll come back to that. Ask me about opinions in a second and data.
Okay.
They realize that the problem is growing, right? They create a focus group.
Yeah.
Okay, which it's a, just to explain, I'm not talking like a focus group in marketing. I'm talking about a focus group from reliability, where they're now focusing in on the problem. They're applying habit two, understand, and they're applying habit three to question what they're doing.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Now, coming back to habit four, decide with data, right? and making this whole process a little bit quicker. You'll have to ask me about that too. You can see I get excited about this stuff. Then what happened was that they had some variation as they went across in time, as they spent time figuring out what was going on, understanding the problem. They're applying habit two, took them a little bit of time. And then lo and behold, what had happened was this dropped down and then continued on where it started over here. So we actually saw the problem grow. These guys realized that they had a problem and do something about it, and then start implementing the changes and see the improvement right here.
Mm.
And it actually settled down to like a noise floor, like just normal little bits and pieces.
Normal operation. Yeah.
And I said to this guy, this here is a good news story.
Mm.
It's a good news story because you can actually see the reliability process actually happen, and the span of this time here is about 9 months.
Yeah, right.
It's about 9 months. Okay. So you could see the problem growing.
Yep.
They realized that they had a problem. He could pinpoint on the timeline where they formed the focus group. You could see that the problem kept on going, and it was a chronic issue with an electrical system. It was a chronic issue with an electrical system. Ongoing joke. with electrical system, you could see there was a period of time before they figured out what to do. And then you could see it start to drop pretty quickly, actually, in this case. Sometimes it's not as big a drop, sometimes it's a little bit less.
Yep.
You could see it drop, and then you could see it settled down to, you know, little niggly things that, you know, human error and, you know, stuff that you can't maintain against.
Yeah.
Awesome. And it was awesome. And I said, you need to show this to people. Yeah.
And I think that really highlights your point. A lot of people are like you said, you know, the day is not worth anything. It's crap. It's like, it's not if you're not using it. Yeah.
What was it? Aldo said, there's value in collecting data. And hopefully Aldo's listening, and Aldo knows who Aldo is. Aldo said, there's value in collecting data, but there's far more value in the actions that you implement from that data, from the learnings from that data.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's like the old adage, like, you only get from it what you put into it, and you know, data that you only get from it what you use it for. If you don't use it, and we've talked about it before in a lot of situations and for a lot of the clients that we deal with now, they're collecting bunches of data, bunches and bunches and bunches and bunches of data, but no one's doing anything about it. It's just
exactly
there.
Exactly.
It's like, I don't know, it's there, but we're collecting it. It's a good thing we're collecting, right? So, yeah, but what are you doing with it?
What are you doing with it? Yeah, yeah. And there's
we don't have time.
Yeah, there's an overhead to that as well. Like, don't forget that there's an overhead, and you know, some of these systems naturally collect the data because they need the data to actually work, and that's awesome, right? So that's like money for free, if you want to call it that. But can we go back to the opinion thing?
Yes, I was going to lead to that.
Yeah,
I just want to recap on that point though. Like, even if you are collecting data and you're not doing anything with it, I think there is always an opportunity to review it. Like this, in this situation, pull out some of your data around a particular machine, around something that you've had challenges with over that year, and just look at it and see if you can spot where things have been fixed, where things have gone wrong, you know, any improvements that you've made. And you got the opportunity to review over that, just like you've highlighted there. And then you can actually present that and see that there are benefits.
Yeah. And the other thing, coming back to the opinion thing.
Yes.
I could go to anyone in anyone's organization and ask them what's wrong, and they'll have an opinion.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you? You'd agree. Dane, wouldn't you?
Yep.
You could go to anyone in the organization and they would tell you what's wrong with the organization.
Yeah.
Or what's happening in the plant, or, you know, and depending on where they sit in the organization will depend upon the answer.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So the maintenance people are going to have an opinion on what's wrong with the organization.
Yeah.
The operations people are going to have an opinion. The management's going to have an opinion. Yep. Right. Right. And it's usually pointing the finger at someone else. Right. Okay. It's really interesting. And I'm just going to call this the power of the Pareto. But when you look at it from a holistic point of view, right? Now, I've had people, and I'm going to use an Australian term, throw someone under the bus.
Yep.
Right, which means blame them for the problem. Yeah, the person that has the problem. Right, so let's say equipment availability. So you're an option in operations and your equipment is not available.
Yeah.
Okay, who's the first people that you blame? Because I know this because I've had it happen to me. They blame the maintenance people because it's the maintenance people that are supposed to make the equipment available for the operations people to use. Okay.
Yep.
Cool. So if you, in your Pareto's, and I'm going to have to use some colors here, in your Pareto's, if you include, and we're talking about hours here, and I'm getting my colors. So if you color code your Pareto's to say, here are all of the operational parameters in my Pareto. So, for example, this is productive time.
Yeah.
Where I'm actually producing product. This one could be setup time.
Yeah.
This one could be something like shift change.
Yeah.
So these are the delays that I see. Righto. So this one here is where you're making the dollars, righto, because you're producing the product, whatever the product may be.
Yep.
This one here is where you're stopped, but you're setting up to produce product. And this one here is like, obviously, we're changing out the humans to operate the machines. Shift change. Yep. Because I for will know, and everyone else probably will know, that a human cannot work 24/7, 365 days a year. Right. So we're going to change out the humans. Then down the bottom here will be, I'm going to color these guys red, where we're actually having, some people call them, non-scheduled delays. Okay. So on this scale here, we're talking hours, number of hours. Yeah. Okay. And this is your parameters. Okay. Now, in those non-scheduled delays, I'm just going to color one yellow. And this is where we're having some sort of production delay. Okay, we're constrained by production for some reason. It's not a maintenance. The equipment's available, but I can't get the rate out of it.
Yeah.
Okay, or I've lost quality for some reason. Okay. Mm-hmm. And the red ones are where I've lost availability. Okay. Yeah. Now, a good reliability engineer will have a handle on this, where the areas of his responsibility are far, far lower than the production delays, the production related delays.
Yeah.
So if somebody comes along to throw you under the bus, you can immediately pull out some data and say, clean up your backyard before you come and hit me over the head or throw me under the bus, because I know this is the delays that I'm causing. And a good reliability engineer, and I had this conversation yesterday, a good reliability engineer will recognize when these red ones are moving upwards.
Yeah.
And they will come back to that magic word, proactively do something about it. Okay.
Yeah.
Whether it's recognizing an upward trend.
Yeah.
Okay. Whether it's recognizing an upward trend or a shift in these parameters. And I recommend that you color code things so that you can easily see that if one of the red ones actually comes up to here, sorry, get my pen back. So if one of the red ones actually comes up to here, you sort of see it straight away.
Mm. Yeah.
It's blatantly obvious.
Mm-hmm.
So, someone's opinion. Someone comes to you and says, electrical faults on the widgets are my biggest problem.
Yeah.
You can prove or disprove that.
Yes.
Using these two plots.
Yeah.
As simple as that.
If they are, that's fine.
Awesome.
A good reliability engineer would be going, awesome, cool. We've actually, yes, I agree, and this is what we're doing about it, or we're looking into it, and you can be proactive in the response.
Yep. It's part of habit one, identify. You've just identified something, and then you've used habit four to say, yes, we need to do something about that. So habit four leads into, if there's a gap, okay, and you're standing here on the cliff, habit four helps you jump the gap.
Yeah.
And us as reliability engineers need to have that skill set. That's why I put the chapter in the book, habit four. Mm. We need to have the skill set to make people say yes or jump the gap. Yes, we need to jump this gap. And we've got to do it simply and concisely, easily and quickly.
And quickly, yeah. Yeah. And I think one thing to come back to, and we've talked about it in the past, is communicating that as well. One thing you want to try to do, and that's take as much ownership of that as you can. So if you go back to your little burrito there for a minute, Seven.
Yeah.
If you are in the situation where your realm of responsibility from a reliability point of view does start to move towards being one of the key problems or key issues, as soon as you see that, take that opportunity to dive a little deeper and then put that forward to others. Put that forward to production, put that forward to management. Say, look, I'm aware that this is becoming a key issue in productive hours. And this is what we're doing about it. We're looking into it.
Yep.
And what I think you're then doing it is you're taking that ownership of it. You're taking that responsibility for it. You understand that it is within your realm of control.
Yep.
And you're in the front foot of saying, I'm doing something about it. I know all too often we want to go I'm doing something, but I don't want to tell them in case I got it wrong or in case it blows up. But it's far worse for them to come to you and go, this is one of my biggest problems. What are you doing about it?
Yeah.
Because by the time they've seen it, they're possibly pissed. It's big enough that it annoyed them and it's frustrated them. Yeah. Or they might be just laying the blame game, but they're possibly laying the blame game because someone's putting the heat on them.
Yeah. So if I go back to this drawing here where we've got the plant and we've got management.
Yeah.
And you're in the middle here as the reliability engineer. Right. It's far more healthier for you to communicate that way that we've got a problem than them to communicate that way. Notice the arrows on the head, righto? And it's far, far healthier for you to communicate that way as well.
Yes.
That you're actually leading the conversations with the guys in the plant.
Yeah, exactly. And it does go both ways. Like, it's not just presenting that problem to production or upper management saying this is a potential issue, or it's starting to shift into becoming an issue with productive hours, but we're looking into it.
Yeah.
It's also then addressing with the staff or the mechanics, the technicians, whoever, or even just looking at the machinery if you're the one looking at it and going to the piece of plant and assessing that. This is a potential issue. We need to look further.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's our role. That's what we do as reliability engineers. We engineer reliability.
Yeah.
Yeah. We make sure it happens. We jump on things. We are the models of proactivity.
And it's so important that we do use that data in that sense to actually analyze it, process it, and move it up and move it down, and then do something about it.
Exactly. As far as I'm concerned, it's a core skill set. It's a core skill set that we need. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, I think we've covered the cyber data. I think we've highlighted some of the criticality of it and how it sort of relates to all the other points and the importance of sharing that information up and down the line and making it sort of link in so that people understand it.
Oh, there's one word that I want to write. A good reliability engineer, right, will automate the process.
Yeah.
Righto? There's value in obviously mining the data or, doing the calculations of the data to get insights or, understanding information, knowledge, wisdom, all that sort of stuff from the data. But the good reliability engineers automate it.
Yeah.
Okay. Because where the value is delivered, coming back to our friend up here, the value is delivered right there. The value is delivered when you implement change.
So
out of that automation, we want to be facilitating, and I'm leading into the next habit, of facilitating change.
That's
where we want to be.
For sure. Awesome. I think we've covered that well. I hope that makes sense to everyone. Thank you again, Seven, for your insight, your inputs. And we know that is a synopsis of Habit 4 and it's our own sort of choosing that version of it.
Yep.
There's certainly more details and information around that and where it works and how to implement it, how to automate it within the book. So if you'd like to get a copy of the book, reach out, hit us up. We'll point you in the right direction.
Oh, the book's available through Reliability Web, Dane.
Yes, correct.
It is available through Reliability Web.
If you want to go straight to it, get online, go to reliabilitywebmiss.com and check it out, and you'll find it there. But thanks again, Seven, for your amazing input and your thoughts. So until then, we'll see you next time. Like, subscribe, hit us up. Follow us up and we'll talk to you all soon.